to Walden Behavioral Care's Eating Disorder Recovery Reflections podcast series. I am Katie Fitzgerald, Walden's Director of Communications. Recovery Reflections is a podcast series where individual eating disorder survivors share their personal stories from struggle to recovery. On today's episode, we will hear Jody's recovery story. Jody is an attorney who has provided legal services and advice to nonprofit and for-profit entities for nearly 20 years. She most enjoys helping individuals manage employment questions and helping them start new independent companies. In order to be able to spend as much time as she can with her daughter, Jody has mostly worked as a lawyer directly for companies, giving her more flexibility and more mommy time. Jody has been a big sister for over 4 years and also volunteers for legal aid group. Her passions include tennis, reading, and her immediate family, which include her daughter, boyfriend, and puppy. Jody, welcome to Recovery Reflections.
Good morning. I think it was inevitable that I would have an eating disorder. From the time I was born, I was very sick and I always felt distressed. By the time I was 8, I had already had 12 surgeries. It was inevitable that an eating disorder would become my way to have control over my own body, to try to make myself feel pretty, and to cry out to everyone around me that I was in distress and I needed help. It was my maladaptive way of coping with how I felt about myself. When I was growing up, my family looked completely average on the outside. We had 2 parents, 2 kids, a dog, a house, and 2 cars. And I was a good kid. I did all my homework without being asked and usually got the top grades in my class every year. And because I was sick a lot, we always went to Boston, where my mother said it was the capital of the medical world and I had the best medical care. I never worried about things like having enough food or clothes or whether or not I could do my extracurricular activities. As a kid, I used to love to figure skate. All of those tangible things were a given in my life. But no one in my family ever came to watch me skate. And nobody asked me about my day when I got home from school. And when I was sick, whether it was chicken pox or scarlet fever or one of the million ear infections I seemed to get, my mother would bring me juice and snacks and medicine, but nobody would come to my room to talk with me or play a game with me. I would be left alone. And I don't ever remember anyone saying that they loved me, and I don't ever remember anyone complimenting me, so I thought, well, there must be nothing to compliment. In the end, it made me feel unloved and not deserving of love. It made me feel ugly. I would spend hours in my room pouring out my sadness to our poodle. When I was 8, I started spending summers away at an overnight camp. And when I was 14, I was sent to boarding school. At first, I thought it would be just a fun extension of camp. But when my parents dropped me off and left, I cried. And I don't think I stopped crying for about 3 days. I felt abandoned by my family. I didn't think I was worthy enough to continue to live with them. I adjusted to boarding school as best I could. I continued to get good grades, and I made friends. I never had a boyfriend. I was too shy and uneasy with myself. But it was at this point in life that eating and food began to change for me. I was now eating 3 meals a day with friends and peers. There was no one to tell me what to eat or what to not eat, when to eat too much or too little, or when to stop, and in between meals I could just have a snack. And if I wanted a snack when we were all sitting in somebody's room at 11 o'clock at night, I just did. It seemed so much easier for me at that point if I could concentrate on homework while working my way through a snack or something. And then suddenly I went home after high school graduation, and someone pointed out to me that my mother now wore a smaller size than I did. I knew my body had changed, but I hadn't felt fat or overweight until I started seeing myself through other eyes. I was no longer that skinny kid I had always been. I felt ugly, but this time for a different reason. Now I was starting to feel fat. This is when I started to become aware of everything I ate, of how much I weighed, of what size clothes I was fitting into. But I didn't really seem to have the concentration or the time for that, because next I went off to college. And at college there were parties and there was drinking and then there were snacks, and we'd call for pizza at 1 o'clock in the morning. And I still felt ugly. I still felt I was eating too much, and I was always thinking about it. I was still shy, never really comfortable with boys or flirting with boys. I started to notice a new sinister voice inside my head that told me, if I had an attractive figure, then some nice boy would like me and would ask me out. I once met a guy in my freshman year, and he was so cute, but I never had the nerve to really talk to him because I just felt so bad about myself. And I kept thinking, if I could lose weight, then I would be attractive, and then somebody would ask me out. But at that point in time, even though I was thinking about it all the time, I had no willpower. I still ate midnight pizza and drank and went to parties. So I wasn't losing any weight or getting that thin figure I thought would resolve everything for me. When I was an upperclassman in college, I finally figured out what I believed could solve my issue. In other words, how I could finally lose weight. But within 2 months of beginning this new plan, I was in a hospital. I was running recurring high fevers. I had welts in my body, which would come and go without forewarning or explanation. And finally, I had a headache so severe I couldn't lift my head. I was diagnosed with meningitis, but the doctors agonized over what was causing my other symptoms. What was the underlying cause? I was questioned by doctors and residents and nurses. How did I get meningitis? Nobody else had it in the area. One day, one of the doctors sat down next to my hospital bed alone, kicked everybody else out of the room, and asked me the same questions everybody had asked me. What was I doing? What was I eating? What was I taking? And I wanted to tell him so it could help me medically, but I couldn't. I was too embarrassed, and I didn't want to get in trouble with my parents. So I just stayed silent. I was able to return to college the following year, and I did graduate on time. But I never stopped thinking, even after my scare in the hospital, that I had to lose weight. As a senior in college, I started interviewing for high-stress jobs on Wall Street, and I started getting one rejection after another. I decided it was because I was too unattractive. With each rejection, my father would get on the phone and give me quote-unquote helpful advice, but all I heard was criticism from him that I didn't look right or I didn't act right. I had some of the top grades in my college class, but I thought everybody else around me was getting hired and not me. My feelings of being unattractive spilled over, so that's how I felt on the inside, and it spilled over to the outside. And it didn't give me enough charisma or assertiveness or confidence to be successful in an interview. But finally, as the months went on, a funny thing did happen, and I did get a job on Wall Street. And I told myself it was only because this department was desperate to hire women. I still didn't give myself credit to it. And I still told myself that what I needed to do to be successful on Wall Street in New York was lose weight. Then I would be more confident, more attractive, more assertive. I moved to New York after college, and my job became my life. I was in the office by 7 in the morning and usually there till about 9 at night. Any day of the week. The bank let us expense dinner when for working these long hours, so every night after work, a group of us would go out to eat, and we would drink, and we'd eat all the restaurant portions, and then we'd order dessert. And it was comforting to know that at least for an hour in the day, you could sit and laugh and get to know your coworkers, and the company was paying for it. But inside, I still felt unloved and unlovable, and I still felt that I was overweight, needed to lose weight, and my lifestyle wasn't helping. At this point in time, my sister, who had also gained weight in college, had lost the weight she had gained. And I learned, as I was told, that for the first time in my life, I weighed more than she did. She had gotten married right out of college. She was happy. She was pretty. And she and my mother had everything in common and were certain that they would each live happily ever after. And I just thought, if I could lose weight, I could be pretty. And then I could fall in love. And then my mother would have things in common with me. And then maybe my father would compliment me. And I wouldn't feel like a failure. I always felt like a failure. A funny thing did happen after I'd been at work for 6 months or so. I began dating a coworker. He was handsome and he was smart and he was slender. And he told me I was pretty and he gave me other compliments. And so I thought I was happy. But then I learned he had a temper. I learned that even if I said something and he misinterpreted it, it was still my fault. But I couldn't break up with him because I believed I was ugly and I believed I wasn't worthy and I believed nobody else would ever want me. And so suddenly one day he proposed and I believed no one else would ever ask me. So I said yes. But first, as my family had always told me, I had to get a law degree. My studies took me to California and my fiancé's work took him to Texas. I got a studio apartment in L.A. and lived all by myself for the first time in my life. I knew no one in California. And except for the 15 or so hours a week when I was in a classroom, I was in that little apartment all alone. And I remembered that after all these years, I could be pretty if I would just lose weight. I lost the weight, then maybe I wouldn't have to marry this man with such a bad temper. And so I stopped buying myself any snacks, and there was nobody to offer me any. There was nobody to get me up in the middle of the night to order pizza, and there was nobody to invite me to any parties. I didn't go to parties, and I wasn't drinking anything. And soon, I think the little poodle in Massachusetts was consuming more calories per day than I was. And do you know how I felt? I felt good. I wasn't getting pretty, but I was proving to myself that I had willpower, that I had inner strength to stick to my conviction. No one could control me but me. I was getting good grades at one of the top law schools in the country and volunteering at a legal clinic where I was really helping people. But I gave myself credit for none of that. The sinister voice in my head told me it only mattered that I was controlling my own body and I was controlling what I was eating. And when my fiancé came to visit, he didn't seem concerned that I wasn't eating or what I was eating. He just wanted to be certain that I was still making good meals for him. He was content now, so he didn't yell or push, so that I told myself that by losing weight, I was making our relationship better. One time, my parents visited briefly in California. Just before leaving for the airport, they sternly admonished me, "You better start eating more." And then they were gone. They never called to ask about my eating or if I was talking to anyone about it. The issue seemed to evaporate from their minds as soon as their plane headed back to Boston. I remember the moment when I knew I had an eating disorder. I was brushing my hair one morning and clumps of hair were coming out. As a kid, I had such thick, beautiful hair. It was probably my one physical trait that I liked about myself. But to this day, my hair is thin and flat. Its fullness and beauty fell out with those clumps that day, and it has never grown back. But you have to remember that I felt good about what I thought I was accomplishing. A part of me knew I had an eating disorder, but I believed I was in control, following my own plan, and I didn't want to stop doing that. My fiancé's work brought him back to the East Coast, so I transferred law schools and we began to live together. My fiancé made the rules, and I felt he had all the control. One day, a couple of girlfriends called and invited me over. When I arrived, one of them took the lead. My friends were worried about me. They were concerned I wasn't eating. They felt I was too thin and I didn't look good and it wasn't healthy, wasn't attractive. They had brochures and ideas about where I could get help, who I could talk to. They would all be supportive of me. And in that moment, I was so happy someone finally had recognized that by letting myself become so thin, I was crying out for something. Perhaps it was love. Perhaps it was a compliment. Perhaps it was just wanting to see if there was one person on the planet who would alter the course of their life, even just the course of one day, to help me. I returned to our apartment and showed the brochures to my fiancé, and nothing changed. I tried to discuss what had happened with him, but he didn't want to talk about it. Was dinner almost ready? He was hungry. At this time, I was on the pill because we didn't want to have children for several more years. 1 month, I missed my period. I went to the doctor, in secret, of course. She told me I was not pregnant, but I missed my period because of my weight. She didn't use any terms like anorexia or too thin, but just because of your weight. Perhaps if she had told me about the lifelong implications of my eating disorder, I might have gone to get help then. But she didn't seem concerned, so why should I be? About 2 weeks before our wedding, my parents telephoned. With four of us on the phone, my parents announced they were going to cancel the whole wedding if I didn't get help for my problem. That's what they called it, my problem. Invitations had already gone out and plane tickets had been bought by friends and family coming from England, Ireland, California, and elsewhere. And still, nothing changed. My parents, my fiancé, none of them offered to hold my hand to change the course of the day for me. Indeed, my fiancé thought anything to do with psychology was like hocus pocus. And my parents were too embarrassed to actually cancel the wedding, so we did get married on the anointed day. My dress was beautiful, and for a few scattered moments that day, I felt beautiful in it. Around our first anniversary, I ended up at the doctor for a stomach bug. Actually, my husband drove me because I had felt sick for days and didn't think I could drive. The doctor came back into the examining room with my husband after being gone for about 10 minutes to tell us that I was pregnant. Yes, I had missed my period, but that had happened before. What are the odds of getting pregnant while on the pill? What are the odds of getting pregnant while on the pill when you are barely eating and have completely disrupted any normalcy in your menstrual cycle? It doesn't matter what the odds were. It had happened. My husband blamed me. He thought I must have been skipping my pill on some days. He was not ready to be a father. He wanted to travel the world and enjoy his freedom. And how did I feel? Just pure shock. But then I was happy. I was going to be someone's mother, and I was going to be the best mother ever, and I would absolutely love this new person, and he would love me, and someone would truly love me. And so I began to eat. I did not want to give birth to someone who would face a lifetime of medical issues, as I had. I did not go back to eating empty junk food. I did not eat all the time or whatever I wanted just because I was pregnant, but I ate enough for the sake of the baby, and I ate healthy foods. And again, I just completely stopped drinking. And once the first trimester had passed, I began to feel healthy, and I had more energy, even if a baby lying on my bladder was constantly disrupting my sleep. I still thought about everything I ate, and I wondered if the calories I was eating were worth it. But I ate what I thought the baby needed. I was going to do for someone else what no one had ever done for me, put this baby's well-being before my own. My husband's attitude toward me deteriorated over the next several months, and one day I came home to find his temper flaring about ugly pictures on our wall. They were mostly pictures from our wedding. He took them off the wall one by one and threw them at me. I left the apartment and drove around for hours. I thought about calling someone, but I just felt like a failure. I was failing at marriage. I wanted to regain control, and the only time I had ever felt in control was when I was controlling my body and what I would eat. When I was 7 months pregnant, I went on a business trip. After several days, when I arrived back home, I found that my husband had moved out of the apartment again. I have never seen him again. And no one showed up at my doorstep to hug me or console me. I was alone again. And again, I seemed to have no control. Events were just propelling me forward, and I didn't know where they were leading. And some days I realized I wasn't alone. I was going to be someone's mother, and that was important. But I was also constantly worrying about whether or not I'd be pretty after giving birth. A sinister voice in my head had certainly not gone away. I did finally get the name of a therapist, and I went to see him. I couldn't connect with him, so I never went back. I got the name of another therapist, and I didn't like her, so I never went back. I decided to give up on therapy. I was living alone. I always felt alone. Most days I felt as though I never talked with anyone outside of work. I was working very long hours, and I was worrying about life after the very short maternity leave they would give me. How would I do my job, which required 60-plus hours each week, without hiring some stranger to care for my baby? And I needed a way to cope with all of this stress. So one day, I just barely ate and felt like I was back in control. I still went to my prenatal aerobics class, and the next day I barely ate. And then one day I went to the obstetrician for my checkup, and he scolded me for not having gained weight since my last visit. And I remembered I had to do what was best for the baby. So I got the name of another therapist. She was a big woman with big flowing clothes that hid her figure. She had short, cropped hair with very large, dangly earrings. And I started to tell her my story. And she listened with intent eyes and a caring expression on her face. She told me I wasn't crazy. Perhaps I had been the victim too long of neglect, of bad tempers, of unreasonable expectations and demands. And for the first time, some voice in my head said that maybe food wasn't actually the problem. Maybe there were deeper issues to think about, work on, and come to terms with. The therapist told me, well, I can help you map out your choices, but the decisions are for you to make. She told me my life was mine to control. And she told me it looked like a glowing pregnant woman. No one had ever told me that before. And I liked her, and I almost instantly trusted her. All through my pregnancy, my obstetrician was concerned that I was so small. The doctors would use a tape measure and measure my stomach and declare that it was never big enough. Because of this, they were doing regular sonograms on the baby. The baby was growing but was very small. And I was so scared. I was scared of giving birth to anything other than a perfectly healthy child, scared that my eating disorder might be causing pain to this baby. Although I'd been eating during my pregnancy, had what I'd done before the pregnancy already doomed this child to a life of sickness? Nothing happened on my due date, and finally 2.5 weeks later, with no other medical options, the doctor induced birth. And I gave birth to a girl, and she was healthy, and she scored a 9 on the Apgar scale, and she weighed 8 pounds, 5 ounces. Exactly 6 weeks later, I had to return to work, and the day I went back to work, I fit into my old clothes. I had been obsessed with being thin after giving birth. The feeling of me needing to be thin had never left me, even during the months when I was eating for the baby. Perhaps I'd been able to pause my eating disorder, but I had not stopped it. I was not back to my old weight, but apparently I was back to the same size. Nonetheless, I wanted to lose the rest of the pregnancy weight. But as someone's mother, I was now thinking more about my long-term health, how important it was that I always be there for this child, and how I always should set a good example for her. So I continued to go to therapy. One day I even brought the baby with me because I wanted these two important people in my life to meet each other. As my daughter was growing up, whenever I wasn't sure what to do as mother or what to say, I would close my eyes and think, what do I wish someone had said to me at that point in my life? And how can I set a good example that I want her to follow? I would tell her a zillion times a day that I loved her and all the reasons why. I made her a Valentine once when she was in elementary school, where I wrote that I loved her because she was as beautiful on the inside as she was on the outside. And whenever I ate, I knew she was watching me. I didn't become a big eater, maybe not even an average eater, but I ate healthy, and I ate enough to keep myself healthy. I ate the way I wanted her to eat. I taught her to eat healthy, which can include ice cream sometimes, if that's your thing. I talked with her about friendships and relationships, and I built a friendship that thrives between the two of us to this day. I've been in and out of therapy, going for long stretches of time as life stresses catch up with me, and I feel like maybe I'm not taking care of myself. I've gone to group therapy where I've learned much from simply listening to other stories and how it made them feel. I've forced myself to learn to talk about my eating disorder. There are still days when I overanalyze what I'm eating and I feel the urge to revert to the behaviors associated with my eating disorder. But then I remind myself that I have a daughter, and now I live with my amazing boyfriend, and I have close friends who I know love me. And that has nothing to do with my clothing size or what any scale says. Just before my daughter left for college, I began to play tennis. I'm a little bit obsessed, although I'm not very good. But I always have fun, and it's good exercise, and I've made some wonderful friends there. And I've learned that I have to eat well in order to be able to play, and I play better when I've eaten well. When my daughter was a teenager, she was asked to do some modeling. We sat down to talk about it, and I told her the story of my eating disorder. I told her about when I thought I was fat. I told her about my therapist, the friends I've met who had similar struggles. I told her that when I had an eating disorder, I felt as though I was driving through a long tunnel, and I just couldn't get out of the tunnel. Finally, recovering from my eating disorder, I find myself emerging from the tunnel, and the sun is bright, and it's warm, and it's welcoming, and there's beautiful wildflowers, and there's a stream running alongside, and I can hear that stream. I can hear the bubbling noises, and if there's a mountain in the distance, I know I can climb it if I want to. The choice is mine. My days, my schedule, my thoughts and plans eventually were no longer structured around what I would eat, what I would not eat, when I would eat. I was able to again enjoy time with friends, even if it involved food. I felt people wanted to spend time with me for the person that I am on the inside. And the most incredible thing was that I began to like me. Being a single mother often meant spending time alone. But I found hobbies and explored my creative side and read all those books I'd always meant to read. I was able to teach my daughter about healthy eating, and more than once, I might accidentally spill whipped cream on her nose at a birthday party. I rediscovered physical activities, tennis, walking, hiking, kayaking, or simply chasing my daughter around the beach. And I know for certain that I have changed for the better. I was able to give my daughter a happy and healthy childhood, and in time, I even gained the strength to talk about my eating disorder, my battle, and my recovery from it. No shame, no bitterness. One day, my daughter and I looked at my wedding album. Years ago, I'd only seen the beautiful dress I was wearing that day. Now, when I looked at the photo, I saw my bones, and it wasn't pretty. I feel I'm more attractive now than I was back then, and I'm much older now. Last year, my daughter met her father for the very first time. She's an adult now, so I wasn't there. She told me all about it afterwards. She said he was very polite, but she caught wind of his true self when he snidely asked her, "So, does your mother still have an eating disorder?" My daughter looked him in the eyes and replied, "She told me all about that. We talk about how she feels sometimes, but she's healthy now." Thank you.
Thank you, Jody, for sharing your recovery story with us. Listeners, we encourage you to share this Recovery Reflection podcast with those you feel could use a boost of inspiration as they travel their own road to eating disorder recovery. Thank you for listening.